All right, Chris Cross gonna make you jump, jump. Daddy Mac, come on in. It's 9:40 on a Tuesday. That's when we check in with our friends at salesporttalk.com. And Karen Lyle will co-host the segment. In fact, Karen is still in London. Karen, you have an interview you did at the Vendée and Pali, huh?
I did. So I got a chance to meet Pip Hare in person, give her a hug, have a great chat with her. And it was just absolutely a wonderful press conference and opportunity to meet all the sailors, 40 sailors getting ready to sail around the world solo in each one of their own boats.
It's Pep. I thought it was Pip. It's Pep?
No, Pip. I said Pip.
Oh, I thought you said Pep. I'm thinking, okay. You know what?
Maybe my voice was too peppy. You never know.
All right, this is something else because I love that town. And I got to ask again, where are you eating dinner tonight?
You know, when I was there, I had a lovely luncheon at the Yacht Club de France. Oh, absolutely exquisite French chef.
All right. Well, the Vendée is a global race. It's very prestigious. And let's go right to it. Here's Karen Lyle in Paris with Pip Hare.
This is Karen Lyle of Sail Sport Talk on Sports Byline, and I'm here in Paris at the Vendée Globe Media Press Conference, and I am meeting Pip Hare for the first time in person. We've talked before, but it's such a pleasure to see you in the flesh.
Oh, it's incredible that you've made the journey to come here and kind of experience this, because it's going to be big.
One thing I didn't realize about the race is that it's also a festival.
It is incredible. So there's 3 weeks of Race Village beforehand, and actually it's 3 million people they're expecting through the Race Village, and 350,000 people in person on the start day.
That's pretty incredible. This is not your first journey on Vendée Globe. We've talked to you before.
This will be my second Vendée Globe race, but I'm under no illusion it's going to be anything like the first. The fleet is incredibly competitive now. We have 40 boats as opposed to 33. The majority of the fleet are now foiling, so they're flying above the water. But also the level of competition has just taken a huge leap. And so I think we're going to see some very, very close racing and intense racing all the way around the planet.
And not all the boats are the same. So are they rated differently according to their design and construction?
No, the Vendée Globe race is first past the post. There is an acknowledgement within that of the first non-foiling boat and the first foiling boat. But we all kind of have to make a decision as to which boat we want. That will depend on our experience, our appetite for risk, our budget. And then if anybody was lucky enough to be able to build their own boat, then they would choose to design a boat for whichever conditions they felt were the most favourable for a race around the world. So they all will be different. They'll be fitted out different. They'll have different sails, because we're all individual sailors and we sail in different ways. But essentially it is first past the post.
When you're in the ocean, you have sometimes objects in the ocean. You have dolphins, whales, you know, different sea conditions. How does that affect the foiling?
So obviously any kind of detritus in the water, that will harm the boat. I use my radar all the time. And my radar will pick it up and I should be able to take avoiding action. There's some stuff that I just can't avoid. A semi-submerged container under the water. There is developing technology that is learning to see that. But still, it's really hard to detect it. And you just kind of have to accept that it is quite low risk. And if you focus on that risk, then that's going to stop you from performing. So you just need to acknowledge it is a risk, and it could hit a foil, it could hit the hull, but we have the means to get safely to the shore afterwards, so you just kind of pack that up. And in terms of the marine life, we're working quite actively with conservation groups and race committees to map where marine life is. So, for example, where any of the kind of big currents come down and you might find an area where big mammals feed, there's a database for sites of marine mammals, which gets fed to all competitors. So we know where someone's seen a whale and we won't go there. But the other thing is the race committee will be putting active exclusion zones into areas where there is marine mammal life. And we saw that in action in the race in the middle of this year, the New York Vendée. And that way, the whole fleet will be routed around areas where we might encounter marine mammal life.
So you are considered here in Paris one of the internationals. Where are you hailing from?
My team is the only British-based team with a British skipper, and we are based in Poole, which is the world's second largest natural harbour, and it's on the south coast of Britain.
So you have any yacht club affiliations?
Yes, I do. So my home clubs are Parkstone Yacht Club and Poole Yacht Club and the Royal Motor Yacht Club. And I'm also an honorary member of the Island Sailing Club and of the RAF Yacht Club as well.
Tell us a little bit about your team that's going to be supporting you remotely.
I think so much focus goes on the skipper in solo ocean racing, but it is a team event. In the same way that a F1 driver couldn't get round the track without the team that, you know, prepare the car, develop the car, you know, analyze data, all of those things. We have exactly that same team focused on the boat and focused on making my races successful. I built my team in the UK over the last 3.5 years, and it's kind of held up by three of us at the top. I work with my operations director, Lou Adams, who manages the business side of things, manages all of the races, gets the team on the road, kind of just makes sure that our engine is constantly turning over. And then we have technical director Geoff Brown, who is immensely experienced, and he manages the boat program. And then within that team there's a whole lot of specialism. So we have people who manage the logistics for race starts, because for a race start I have to take my team, my tools, my spares, my boat, my support vehicles, and put them all on a ferry and take them to France, and I sail the boat to France, and then they meet me at the race village with our mobile workshop. They prepare the boats, you know, there's an awful lot of organization. And sometimes I'll have races with stopovers in the Caribbean, and they have to fly everyone out to the Caribbean to meet me, to fix the boat, to turn it around so I can go back. You know, there's a huge amount of attention to detail around. So right now, Melanie, who manages our logistics, she's also managing my diet for the Vendée. So she's packing all of my food for the Vendée Globe now. She's counting the calories. She's making sure I've got the nutrients. My technical director will be managing all my tools and spares for me. Is it every single person plays a role towards our success, because every tiny detail matters. And however well I do, it's us. It's not me, it's us.
This is Karen Lyle with SailSport Talk, and on Sports Byline, I'm speaking with Pip Hare, the Vendée Globe. We are in Paris together before the race, and really looking forward to the start of this race. There's so much preparation that goes into a race like this.
And there really is, and you know, like I said before, it's the tiny, tiny details that matter. Because I am living for months on end in what, quite frankly, is a hostile environment at times. So things need to be easy. They need to be safe. They need to be so robust that they don't break. And if they do break, I need redundancy. I need someone to have thought about what it's like for me to try and stick my hand in a tiny hole in the dark on a moving vessel and remove a screw. Yeah, I want them to be able to imagine the difficulty that I have and then be able to translate solutions that are easy for me to use. And whenever whenever I finish a training session, I'll always come back and I'll have a job list of things that we could do better, or things that didn't work, or things that were outstanding. And I always try and make sure that my team have a proper debrief, and they kind of come on the journey with me so that they understand what it's like for me at sea and why their jobs are important and why they should take pride and care about what they do. And that way we're progressing together and everyone's in it and everyone cares.
How much does muscle memory play into this?
I mean, muscle memory is really important. And actually, for me, it's not just about being able to carry out autonomous actions. It's also about confidence. You know, I am 50 years old. I'm fit. I'm strong. But I need to remind myself, my brain and my body, what I'm capable of. Because, you know, sometimes you do start, you know, tiny little seed of doubt might plant itself in you. And so for me, it's really important. You walk down the dock, you look at my boat, you look at it, and it is enormous. It's enormous. And you, if you're just standing next to it, you feel small, and you look at it and you think, I sail that? So for me, I need to go and practice. I sail probably a lot more than some of the other skippers because I need to practice. I need to retain that muscle memory, but I also need to retain the confidence that my body, what it feels like for my body to do it, and the confidence in my head that I can do it.
Well, I think also, especially with night sailing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, everything in... And we... We've now got to a stage where if anybody moves anything on the boat, they will get the they'll get the sharp end of my tongue, because I have put everything exactly where I want it, everything. And in the middle of the night, when I reach for a rope, I expect it to be there, so that I'm not wasting an action. You know, when the boat's traveling at over 30 knots, moving around is dangerous. So you need to be knowing where you're going, what you're doing, how you're doing it, and everything has its place. And you establish these very, very stringent routines that just get you through those incredibly challenging physical moments.
And sometimes the first casualty of the race is the plan, is it not?
Yeah. Yeah, the plan is ignore the plan.
Pip, thank you so much for being on the show with us.
Oh, it's been a real pleasure. It's really, really nice to meet you. Thank you for coming.